58, 59, 60. That was 1 minute. How awkward was that? Pretty awkward. If it was awkward for you, it was really awkward for me because everyone's looking at me like, what is he doing? You know, are you waiting for a video to start and you're having a tech problem? Is the microphone not on? Actually, in first service, we had a special right after the worship and right before the sermon, and I forgot about it. And it was my bad, so I just stood up and I was going to start my minute of silence. And we got about 30 seconds, and Krista Bryant and Gene Hamill, who were doing the special, Krista gave me this face like, sorry. And so she gets up out of her seat and comes, and they play their special. And I thought, hey, that's great. And so we did the other 30 seconds after they were done, and it worked out fine. But I thought, you know, here's the point. That was 1 minute of being still. Today we're talking about being still. How awkward was that for 1 minute? Now, granted, you know, this is kind of an awkward place to do that. You're expecting me to talk. You're expecting something to happen. If you're sitting at home, maybe you could be a little more comfortable for 1 minute. But the point is, when we have even just 1 minute of stillness, how uncomfortable is that? You know, in first service, I love that they got up and played a song because it was like, something's wrong. Oh, it was supposed to be me. Yeah, that was me. I was supposed to play a song. And we fill it. If there's a silence, we're going to fill it. We're going to make something happen during that still time. And it's so hard to be still, you know, and it's hard for me. And I don't think it's just me. I think it's a lot of us. You know, how many people, they always have to have the radio on, have to have it going. How many people say, you know, I have to have the TV going, even if I'm not watching it, it's just noise in the room. You know, we have, in this day and age, we have our cell phones and our smartphones, and we have our phones with us all the time. A couple of months ago, I was going to Sonic, and I was just going to get drinks, right? I was going to go get a couple of drinks for me and Ashley and come home. And I got there, and I ordered my drinks, and I realized I don't have my phone. And I had, I mean, how long is it going to take for Sonic to make two drinks, right? It's not going to take very long, 3 minutes maybe. And I'm thinking, I had this slight panic attack. Like, what do I do for the next 180 seconds? I'm going to be so bored, you know? And I had this realization, I'm like, wow, I can't even just, I'm so used to filling every second, you know, with something. If I'm on my phone, I can't be on. I can't check Facebook. I can't play solitaire. I can't do anything. You know, what am I going to do for 3 minutes? And I had this thought of like, wow, how far have I gone from being able to just sit and be still? And I'm not the only one. I don't think I'm the only one. Maybe I am, but we're busy. We fill every minute. We go from work to this appointment, to that appointment. We are just so busy. And even at night, you know, we watch TV at night, or we have headphones in with music in, or for me, it's reading. You know, I'll read at night in bed. I read almost every night. And a lot of times I fall asleep reading, you know, and it's, we can't even fall asleep without having those moments filled sometimes. And why not? Why can't we, why is it so hard to just be still? Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. That's a verse we've probably all heard at some point or another. If you've been around church at all, that's a verse that you've probably heard. Be still and know that I am God. Psalm 46:10. So we're going to look at, first of all, why is it hard to be still? I think one of the first reasons that it's hard to be still is that we're, quote, too busy, unquote. We're too busy. We have too many things in our lives. Now, that's a bad excuse, but I think it's also true. Even if that's not a good excuse to not be still, it's a fact. We have too many things in our lives to take time and just be still and be with God. We have too many things. And that just happens. You know, if there's any time that's not filled, we'll fill it. Think of the phrase, killing time. I'm just killing some time. I have this time in between these two things, and I can't just do nothing. I have to come up with something. We have to fill every minute. And really, it's not that we're too busy. It's that we have misplaced priorities, right? Because the things that are really important to us, we find time for. You know, we find time to eat every day, right? It's important because if you don't eat, you're going to die. So it's important. We're going to do it every day. I find time every day. I don't know about you. You know, some of us have our favorite TV shows every week. We find time to watch that. You know, things that are important to us, we find time for. because it's a priority and we say this is going to be important. So it's a matter of being intentional to say, you know what, being still and spending time with God is something I'm going to be intentional about. And it's hard. If we don't be intentional, it won't happen, because our lives just fill up because we're so busy. Another reason I think we aren't still is that we're trying to do things for God. We're so busy doing things for God, or we think it's for God. You know, we go from this to that. Richard Swinson, I found this quote online. Richard A. Swinson said, "Busyness is not a synonym for kingdom work. It is only busyness." You know, some of us are so involved, and that is great. You know, we have Bible studies and Life Connection and Wednesday night and Sunday morning and baking cheesy potatoes for the church dinner, right? Go from thing to thing to thing, and we're serving God, but we're trying to do these things for God. Look what all I'm doing for you. And don't get me wrong, those are good things. In fact, without those things, without the fellowship of other believers, without being in those relationships where we lean on each other and we help each other out and we lift each other up, we need that. And we need to spend time with other people, and we need to serve, because it's not just about us. We need to spend time investing in other people and serving their needs. And so all those things, being involved in a church is not a bad thing. And being busy involved in a church is not a bad thing. But sometimes we're trying to do things for God, and that's what it becomes about. It becomes, my relationship with God is no longer a relationship. It's all these things that I'm doing. And as I wrote out this phrase, it struck me in a different way, of things we're trying to do for God. So hopefully that means I'm doing this for God's glory. God, this is what I want to do for you to show you how much I love you, right? I'm doing this for God. But it can kind of mean, God, I'm going to take this over from you. Let me do this for you, right? Have you ever tried to show someone how to do something who's really bad at it, and they say, hey, can you show me how to do whatever, and it's something that you are very comfortable with, and you start to say, no, don't click there, no, click over there, no, to the, this is, I'm thinking of Dave Sprague trying to show me things on the computer, and he's like, no, click there, no, no, and you're trying to show them something, and pretty soon you say, just let me do it, right? Not Dave, Dave's very good, but sometimes he just has to do it, because he's smarter than I am. But we have this moment when we just say, you know what, just let me do it. And we do that to God. We say, you know, God, I know you have this great plan and you have all these ways you want to use me, but just let me do it. I think I have a handle on it. I got this. And we try, instead of doing things for God, for God's glory, to give him praise, it is, God, let me do this for you. I got this. And we're doing things for God, and because we're so busy doing all these things, we have no time to just sit and be with God. And be still. We have so much time doing things for God that we have no time to be with God. Eugene Peterson said, "Busyness is the enemy of spirituality. It is essentially laziness. It is doing the easy thing instead of the hard thing. It is filling our time with actions instead of paying attention to God's actions. God is at work. We need to be still enough to notice what God is doing. To say, what is God doing? Let me be a part of that." And then he finishes by saying, it is taking charge. Instead of paying attention to God's actions, we're filling our time with our own actions, and we take charge of our life and say, God, I've got this. I got this. Let me do this for you. And we need to take time to be still and just be with God. Because, you know, those are, like I said, that is an essential part of being a Christian, is serving others, being involved in a fellowship of believers. We also need, if we're serving others, we need that time alone with God, that we are being fed ourselves, that we are just sitting at the feet of Jesus and listening and being in his presence. And that is what is going to empower us to serve others. You can't have one without the other. I think another reason we aren't still is that we don't know what God will say. Sometimes I think we're a little scared that God will ask us to do something really uncomfortable, right? God, I don't know what God would ask me to do. God might call me to go to Africa. God might call me to be nice to that person who just really weirds me out. God might call me to do something really hard. I don't know what God will say. And so I step back and say, you know what, if I'm still with God too much, then he might tell me something that I don't want to hear. I'm going to keep God at arm's length. Another reason, and this is kind of the opposite of, you know, we don't know what God will say. Sometimes we know exactly what God will say. And it's because we have sin in our life. Sometimes we can't be still and listen to God because there's sin in our life. And we know exactly what God is going to say. He's going to say, hey, I've addressed this in your life. This is sin. What are you doing about it? And the only answer we have is not much. And so to stay out of that uncomfortable situation, we keep God at an arm's length and we say, God, I can't slow down enough to listen to you because I know what you're going to say. We have sin in our lives. This is, you know, we see this in the Bible. We see this with Adam and Eve after they sin. And before they sin, you know, they would walk with God in the cool of the day in the garden, right? Isn't that stillness? Isn't that just being with God? To walk in the garden in the cool of the day and just spend time with God in a relationship. And so they sin. And after they sin, God comes. The next time God comes to walk with them in the garden, and they're hiding. And isn't being too busy for God a way of just hiding from God? And God says, where are you, Adam? And this is Genesis 3:10. Adam says, I heard you in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid. In other words, I knew I was sin. I knew I had sin in my life. And I was ashamed, and so I hid from you. I held you at an arm's length. My life is too busy to be still because I know what God will say. We see this also in Isaiah chapter 6 when Isaiah has his vision of heaven. And he sees God on his throne, and he sees the angels worshiping God, and he sees just all the holiness of God, and he's completely overwhelmed. And he says, I am undone. I'm going to die because I've seen the holy God, and I am unholy. I have unclean lips, and I come from a people of unclean lips. I have sin in my life. And I'm going to die because I saw God, and I have sin in my life. When we come into the presence of God, our sin just kind of bubbles to the surface, and we see it for what it is. And we can't hide it. And that's a reason, I think that's a huge reason that we can't be still. Because if we're still for too long, we might realize what God is tapping on our shoulder and saying, what are you doing about this? Because we have sin in our life. So we have trouble being still. But why do we need to be still? That's the next thing. Why is it important to be still? First of all, creation is designed to be still. If you look at the world around us, it is designed to be still. Look at the seasons. You have four seasons, right? You have seasons of growing. You have seasons of life. And then you have a season where, you know, the leaves fall off the trees and the bears hibernate and there's a rest. There's a stillness. Every year, the earth we stand on rests and takes a break. Look at our bodies. Our bodies have to sleep. Our physical bodies have to sleep. That is just a fact. If you don't sleep, you will die, either from exhaustion or from a car wreck because you fell asleep while you were driving. That's not a good decision. But your body has to rest. If your body can't rest, we recognize it as an illness. If you can't sleep, and that's chronic, and that's a problem, we say, there's something wrong. You need to go to the doctor. You need to, you know, talk to a psychiatrist. You know, people, when they can't sleep, they do something about it. They go and see it because they say, this is a problem in my life. This is an illness. But with our soul, when our soul can't rest and be still, we don't see it that way. Here's some problems that can be caused by chronic sleep deprivation, all right? I got this off the internet, so you know it's true, all right? Here's problems that can be caused by chronic sleep deprivation. Achy muscles, confusion, memory lapses or loss, depression, developmental false memory, which is terrifying to me, hallucinations, hand tremors, headaches, bags under the eyes, increased blood pressure, increased risk of diabetes, irritability, obesity, seizures, and this one, I don't know, this sounds crazy, but this one applies especially to children only. And I don't know if I believe it, so you parents might have to back me up on this, but temper tantrums in children, right? No tired child has ever thrown a temper tantrum, right? That's what I thought. So maybe you know more than I do about that. When we can't sleep, when our body can't rest and be still, It is a problem, and it causes all kinds of other problems. The problem is we don't think about that as being true for our soul, even though it is. If our soul can't rest and be still, it is a problem. It is a spiritual illness, and it is going to cause a lot of other spiritual illnesses in our life if we can't rest and be still. Creation is designed to be still. The second thing is that Jesus took time to be still. You see this all throughout the Gospels when you look at Jesus' life. I have three verses here from three of the different Gospels. Luke 5:16 says, "But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed." Not sometimes, not when things were really bad, often. It was his habit. He withdrew to a lonely place and prayed. He took time to be still. Mark 1:35 says, "Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed." He took the time to say, "You know what? I'm going to get up early, and I'm going to go be with God." Matthew 14:23, "After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone." So that's, from sometime in the day into the night, that he's there alone with God. Here's the deal. If Jesus, the Son of God incarnate, the perfect man who never sinned, took time out of his schedule to be alone with God because he thought it was necessary, I probably can't live without it either. If Jesus did it, I better do it. If Jesus had to do it to maintain that relationship with God, his Father, what makes me think that I can do my life without that? We have to. And these are three verses, but you can find more references to this in the Bible. It's very clear that Jesus consistently took time to be still and be by himself and pray and spend time with God. And that's what Jesus did, and we have to do the same thing. Another reason we have to be still is that when we're not still, we try to fill our lives with other things that won't fulfill us. Here's the deal. Our life will be full. The question is, what will it be full of, and will it happen by accident or will it happen on purpose? Because life will fill up on its own. Your hours and your days will fill up on their own. It's almost Christmas time. You know this already, right? Most of you have, get-togethers and parties and travel and going to see family already planned for most of this month, I would guess. Life fills up. If you have kids in school, they have concerts and they have sporting events and they have all these things. Life fills up. It will happen whether you want it to or not. The question is, are you going to be intentional to fill it with times to be still? You have to be intentional, because otherwise your life will fill up. And we will fill it with things that won't satisfy us. We will try to find things in life that will satisfy us like a relationship with Christ will, but we will not find it. And we'll waste years of our life trying to find fulfillment in things that won't do it. When we're not still, and that means taking time to say, "I'm going to be still and think about my life. Think about what I'm putting in my life. Think about what's not in my life that maybe should be there." We have to be still. As I was, looking at this passage, I decided I wanted to look up what that word "still" meant. And that word that's translated "still" I got ahead of myself. Okay, the word that's translated as "still" in the original Hebrew is actually all over the Old Testament. It's translated in a lot of different ways, I found out. And so here's some of the ways that it's translated in other verses. It's translated in different ways. Here's some of the ways. Let go. So like let go of something with your hand. It talks about, letting your spear drop or your shield drop. Drop it. If you have something in your hand, to drop it and let it go. Or to leave it or to leave someone, a specific person, alone. This is ways this is translated in various verses in the Bible. And I just thought, when you plug that back into the verse, how that adds a little bit to the meaning. And to me, it helped me think about some things. Because there's some things that I don't want to let go of. There's some things that I want to hold on to, and God says, you've got to let go of that. You've got to drop it. And what are we holding on to? That's the question. What are we holding on to that we need to give to God? Control? Control of our lives? Control of the situation? Trying to do things our way? Are we holding on to pride? To say, I can do this myself, God, I know you love me, but I can do this. Are we holding on to a grudge? To bitterness, to anger? What if we plug this back in with that kind of thing in mind and say, let go and know that I am God. Let go of that anger. Let go of that bitterness. Let go of your pride and know that I am God. Drop it and know that I am God. You've been having the same fight with that same person for 30 years. Drop it and know that I am God. God's in control. I don't have to be in control of the situation. Leave it alone and know that I am God. You don't have to control everything. God is God. Let it go. Other ways this translated is to be weak or to be feeble or to collapse. And sometimes we're just so, and we might not even mean it as a prideful thing, but we think we're so strong. And we think, you know, I want to try my best to serve God. I want to try my best to live right and do all the things that honor God. But instead of relying on God's grace and God's power to do that, we try to do it ourselves. This is something that that I get caught up in. I was raised in the church, so this is my life. I knew what a Christian did. I knew what you were supposed to say as a Christian. I knew what you're supposed to do and not do as a Christian. And so even a good desire to say, I want to be a good person, becomes pride. It becomes, I am strong enough to do this on my own. When what's central to the gospel is you're not strong enough to do this on your own. You're not good enough. We only get forgiveness. We only go to heaven not because of what we've done, but because of what God did for us. And that requires us to be weak. It requires us to say, God, it's not my strength. I'm trusting in your strength because my strength is weak. Be weak and know that I am God. I'm God. I'm the one that forgave you. I'm the one who died for you. That's how you are forgiven. Be weak and know that I am God. In 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9, Paul is talking about the thorn in his flesh. He says, I prayed with God to take it away, but this is what God said to me. My grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So now I am glad to boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ can work through me. If we're too proud to admit that we're weak, God can't work through us. I mean, he will. God will accomplish his purpose in the world. But if God is going to be truly glorified in our life, and us intentionally doing that, saying, God, I want you to glorify my work. We can't be proud. We have to say, I am weak, and I'm only who I am because of the grace of God. We have to be weak and know that he is God. I think sometimes to define something, it's helpful to say what it isn't. And that's what I have next, is stillness is not. Stillness is not a lack of activity. You know, sometimes, and what, like we've been talking, life is busy. Life fills up. It just does. We don't need to feel guilty about having a busy life. Life is busy. But how do we take time in that busyness to sit and be still and be with Jesus and to be with God? Stillness is not a lack of activity. You know, sometimes we're waiting. I've found myself doing this before. You know, you're waiting for the end of the school year when things will be less crazy. And then, well, I'm waiting for the end of summer because summer's crazy, and at the end of summer things will be less crazy. And then, well, the school year's starting again, and, you know, I have all these things going on. And then when it comes to Christmas break, things will be better. Well, when Christmas break, you have traveling and you have family coming and all, and you're waiting for some time when life is going to be less busy. And it never comes. That's my experience anyway. All my experience is that my life has only gotten more busy and more complicated the older I get. With every passing year, my life just gets busier and more complicated. There's more to it. And you know what? That's okay. But if we're trying to wait for this magical time when life is simple, we are never going to be still. If we're waiting, I'll be still, I can take a breather when fill in the blank. That blank will never be filled in, because that is never going to happen. There's some lyrics from an old hymn written in 1882 by William Longstaff called Take Time to Be Holy. And here's some lyrics from it. Take time to be holy, the world rushes on. Spend much time in secret with Jesus alone. The world rushes on in 1882. You kind of think, really? Wait, you gotta, you know, I don't know what they're doing. You know, we think we're so busy right now, and you look back 100 years ago, and you think, wow, life was easy, life was simple. You know, those were the good old days. And it might not be this far back. You might just look back to an early time in your life and say, man, those were the good old days. Life wasn't busy then. Yeah, it was. We think we're so busy and things didn't used to be. But here is 100 plus years ago, William Longstaff saying, life rushes on. The world rushes on. Life is crazy. The fact is, life has always been crazy. Life has always been busy. And it's not going to get less busy. And if we're waiting for a magical time when it's not, we will never, ever be still. As we come towards the Christmas season, I think about the story of Mary and Joseph. And I think that's instructive for us in this setting. Mary and Joseph, at the Christmas story, is not a story where there is a lack of activity, right? Think about it. They're traveling 70 miles from Nazareth to Bethlehem. Best case scenario, Mary got to ride on a donkey, 9 months pregnant. So, women, how many of you would think a best case scenario is to ride 70 miles on a donkey, 9 months pregnant? Any takers? Anybody signing up for that? That's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario is you're walking 70 miles, 9 months pregnant. That's a lot of activity. When they got there, this was a census of the whole region, and everyone's coming back, so the town is busting at the seams. There's people going everywhere. My vision of this, as I was thinking about it, is like Black Friday traffic, of like, you know, the streets are clogged and people are running and it's craziness. It would have been a packed, the whole town would have been packed. There's all this activity going on, and yet we don't see Mary and Joseph in a state of panic. We don't see them in a state of worry. They're still. There can be a stillness even in the midst of a lot of activity. And that's how our life is too. There's going to be activity. There's going to be lots of things going on, but we can take time to be still in the midst of a busy life. Being still is also not a lack of conflict. Being still is not a lack of conflict. I think sometimes we're waiting, just like sometimes we're waiting for activities to subside, sometimes we're waiting for situations to resolve before we just take a breath. You know, if I could just resolve that argument with that person, or, you know, if once this situation at work gets a little better. And sometimes it's not always conflict with a person. Sometimes it's just life situation. You know, sometimes it's a financial strain. If we can just get past this little tight time in our finances, then we can just take a breath. It could be an illness, you know. If we can get through this, then I can take a time to just take a breath. And if we're waiting for a lack of conflict to be still, we will be waiting forever. Stillness is not a lack of conflict. Again, let's look at Mary and Joseph. When the angel came to Mary and said, you're going to have a baby, most Bible scholars think that Mary was probably a teenager, 14, 15, 16, something in that area. A teenager who's not married, and an angel comes to you and says, you're going to have a baby. Now today, teen pregnancy could be, say, you know, unfortunate in our culture, but mostly in our culture, it's fairly accepted. In their culture, it wasn't. In their culture, that would have been a lot of shame. That would have been a lot of she faced being ostracized, and not only her, but her baby. That's conflict, folks. And Joseph has the same thing, except he kind of almost has an out, right? Because he didn't have to marry her, and he wasn't going to. He said, and he tried to, he had a plan to give her as much dignity as he could, but to divorce and to break off the engagement. But the angel came to him and told him the same thing, and he had a stillness. You know, Mary says, not, I don't want this to happen, please ask someone else, I don't want to deal with this. She says, I am the Lord's servant, let it be to me as you have said. That's a stillness. That's a stillness that says, even in the midst of I see conflict coming my way, but God, I'm trusting in your plan. I'm trusting in what you have planned and what you have put together for me. And Joseph does the same thing. The angel tells him, don't be afraid to take Mary home as your wife. And he does. He goes and he says, okay. So basically, to those out from the outside looking in, Joseph is admitting, saying, yeah, I'm the father of this baby. Out of wedlock, in a society where that was very frowned upon. And so he took that shame, he took that being ostracized upon himself too. That's conflict. When they go to Bethlehem, everyone's supposed to go back to the city where their family is from, right? And so, like, all of you could probably say, hey, where's your family from? And most of you could have areas or towns where you have concentrations of family. So they're going to this town where they're in theory, you would think they would have some family members, probably lots of family members. Why aren't they staying with family? It's kind of like when, you know, you call up a relative and they say, hey, we're coming to town. I wonder if we could stay a couple nights with you. And you say, yeah, we'd love to have you. There's a Holiday Inn down the street, right? That's not an awkward conversation. Well, it is. That's kind of the feeling. And that's a speculation. The Bible doesn't tell us that. They were rejected by family. But it's very possible they had family in town. And why aren't they staying with them? Conflict. There's no lack of conflict in the Christmas story. It's not a story where everything is peachy and everything is fine. It's a story with conflict. And yet we see in Mary and Joseph a stillness. The only indications we have of their state of mind at the time, there's two things. There's Mary's song. And Mary sings a song of praise to God when she's pregnant. And thanksgiving. She talks about the things that Jesus will do. That's a stillness. And then when the baby's born, when Jesus is born and the shepherds come to visit, and it says, Mary treasured up all these things in her heart. She said, I want to just soak in this moment and remember every detail. That's not stress. That's not worry. That is stillness. That is a person saying, I'm resting in what God is doing in my life. There's conflict all around, but I'm resting. Psalm 46, where we have our title verse from today, is all about that. If you look through Psalm 86, it's all about the chaos going on around. And in the midst of that, be still. I'm going to read some of that. Psalm 46, verse 1. God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we will not fear when earthquakes come and the mountains crumble into the sea. Let the oceans roar and foam. Let the mountains tremble as the waters surge. Verse 6. The nations are in chaos and their kingdoms crumble. God's voice thunders and the earth melts. The Lord of heaven's armies is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. Be still and know that I am God. Mountains crumbling, seas are rising, nations are in turmoil, and the psalmist says, be still. Stillness is not a lack of conflict. It's a stillness. It's a peace in the middle of conflict. Stillness is also not a lack of action. It doesn't mean you do nothing. One of my favorite examples of this is Nehemiah. And you look in the book of Nehemiah at the very beginning, and Nehemiah is serving the king of Persia. And the Israelites have been exiled out of their homeland, and so Jerusalem is destroyed, it's in ruins, it's rubble. And one day, as Nehemiah is serving the king, he's the king's cupbearer, and he's thinking about his homeland, and he's just sad, he's just upset about it. And so the king says, I've never seen you sad before, what's wrong? And in Nehemiah 2, verse 2, this is what he said, I was very much afraid, but I said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not look sad when my city and my ancestors are buried in lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire? The king said to me, what is it you want? And this is the part that I like. Then I prayed to the God of heaven and I answered the king. He took a minute and he said, I'm going to be still for a minute. I'm going to pray to God. I prayed to the God of heaven. That had to be a quick prayer. Right, the king asks you, what do you want? And you're in the middle of a conversation with a king who has the power to help you or kill you or whatever. You better have an answer. But he said, what do you want? And he said, I prayed to the Lord. He took even just a moment to be still and ask for God's help. But he didn't just be still. He took an action, and I answered the king. And if you read the rest of that story, he asked the king permission to go back and rebuild Jerusalem, and he's given that permission, and the king helps him do that. And God gives him favor. But it's not a lack of action. And in the story, it says he was terrified. He said just before, I was very much afraid. It was scary. But I took a moment to be still, and then I acted on what God was putting on my heart. I really like that. We also see this in Mary Joseph once again. The angel comes to Joseph and says, don't be afraid to take Mary home as your wife. And Joseph could have agreed with that and thought, okay, that's a good idea. I believe you. But there was an action step. He had to actually take Mary home as his wife. And he did. So this stillness, is part of it is resting in God's plan. Say, I don't know how this is all going to work out, but I'm going to rest in what God has told me, and I'm going to act upon what God has told me. I'm being still, and that stillness enables me to know what step to take next, because I'm listening to God. Which takes us to listening is. Here's what listening is. Sorry, what stillness is. Stillness is listening. Stillness is listening. God is waiting for us to stop and just listen to him. John 8:47 says, anyone who belongs to God listens gladly to the words of God, but you don't listen because you don't belong to God. Are we going to listen or not? Are we going to stop and listen to what God has to say to us? Being still means being willing to hear what God has to say, being willing to be uncomfortable. We talked about that earlier. You know, sometimes we're not still because we don't know what God will say and we think it might make us uncomfortable. But we have to be willing to listen to something even if it might make us uncomfortable, even if it challenges us, even if it's hard. We have to be willing to listen. In Proverbs 1, verse 23, Solomon is writing as if he is wisdom. He's personifying the idea of wisdom as a person. And wisdom says, come and listen to my counsel. I'll share my heart with you and make you wise. Listen. Listen. In Psalm 81:8, the psalmist writes, hear me, my people, and I will warn you. If you would only listen to me, Israel. And then Psalm 81, verse 13. If my people would only listen to me, if Israel would only follow my ways, how quickly I would subdue their enemies and turn my hand against their foes. God is saying, I am just so ready for you to stop and listen to me. Listen to what I've already told you. Listen to what I have to tell you. Stillness is listening. Frederick William Faber said, God is always whispering to us. Only we do not always hear because of the noise, hurry, and distraction with which life causes as it rushes on. God is always speaking. Are we going to take time to listen? Stillness is obedience. This goes hand in hand with stillness is not a lack of action. Even though you're resting in God's plan, there still are things for us to do. Remember Joseph's stillness and yet his obedience. In James 1, verse 22, it says this, don't just listen to God's word. That's the first part, listening. But don't just listen. You must do what it says. Otherwise, you are only fooling yourselves. If you listen to the word and don't obey, it's like glancing at your face in a mirror. You see yourself, walk away, and forget what you look like. But if you look carefully into the perfect law that sets you free, and if you do what it says, and don't forget what you've heard, then God will bless you for doing it. It's an action. Stillness is something we have to do. It's obedience. To step out and say, I'm going to do what God has asked me to do. When we are still, we will obey. Stillness is a daily relationship. I think this is maybe the most important part. It's a daily relationship. It's not something we revisit when we want to. It's not something that we do when we really need it, and then we leave it alone for the rest of the time. It's a daily relationship. We need to set aside time every day to spend with God. But it also has to be for the right reasons. You know, if you're going to have a relationship with God, you have to spend time with Him. But if you do it because you have to, it's not much of a relationship. Think back, those of you who are married, think back to when you were dating your spouse, all right? Now, in order to have a dating relationship, you have to spend time with that person, right? Otherwise, it doesn't exist, right? So by definition, you have to spend time with them. But did you spend time with them because you had to? No. It's not because you had to. It's because you want to be with them. You want to be in their presence. You want to be in the same room with them. If you can't be in the same room, you want to hear their voice, so you call them on the phone, right? Think about those phone calls. Were they laundry lists of that you checked off? Hi, how are you? Oh, okay, good. How was your day? Good, yeah, okay. How was your food? Oh, good. Did you do everything you wanted to do today? No. Oh, well, you should work on that. That'd be great. I mean, just because you would be happy. I mean, not that you're not happy. Never mind. I guess that's all on my list. Anything you want to ask me? No? Oh, okay. I'll see you later. Bye. Does that sound like a familiar conversation? I hope not. You talk to them because you just wanted to talk. You probably had conversations where you had nothing to talk about that went for hours, right? Because it didn't matter what you were talking about, it just mattered that you were talking to that person. And we do this to God. We say, I have to spend time with God. It's true, we have to. But if you do it because you have to, it's not a relationship. It's a checklist. You don't need God to have a checklist. You can make your own little checklist, you know, read my Bible, thought about being nice, you know, thought about what the Bible said, said a prayer. You don't need God for that. You need God for a relationship. If you're going to have a relationship with God, you have to view God as a person because He is a person. Stillness is a relationship. It's setting time every day to spend time with God. And yes, sometimes we come in with specific things we want to talk to God about. And it's not bad to have a list of things that we pray for, because we're forgetful people. And if I don't write things down, I forget them. It's okay to have a prayer list. I'm not saying that. But if our relationship with God is a list of things we do and we check off, it's not much of a relationship. And being still means just being in the presence of God, just to be in his presence. And that will change our lives. I want to end today the same way we started, with just a moment of being still. And maybe today you need to listen. Maybe you haven't been listening very well. You've been plugging your ears to what God is trying to say. You need to take your fingers out of your ears and just have a minute to say, God, I'm listening. God, what do you want to say to me today? We need to start listening. Maybe for you, you've been listening to God, but you haven't taken that step of obedience to say, okay, God. Maybe we haven't been still because we know what God is asking us to do and we're not comfortable doing it. We're scared of it. We're not willing to do it yet. And we need to be still in God's plan and say, God, you're calling me to something that scares me. But you know what? I trust you. Help me to trust you. And help me to be obedient. Not just to agree that it's a good idea, whatever you're calling me to, but to take the steps to actually do it. And being still is also a relationship. And maybe you have been trying so hard with the right seemed like the right motivations to do all these things for God, to spend time reading his word, to spend time in prayer, but you've forgotten about the relationship of God. Be still. And I invite you to just sit in his presence, just to sit in his presence. We're going to go in a spirit of prayer, and I invite you to bow your heads and close your eyes. There's nothing magical or important about that other than it's just something to eliminate a distraction of looking around, seeing what other people are doing. Let's bow our heads, close our eyes, and take a moment to be still. God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we will not fear when earthquakes come and the mountains crumble into the sea. Let the oceans roar and foam. Let the mountains tremble as the waters surge. A river brings joy to the city of our God, the sacred home of the Most High. God dwells in that city. It cannot be destroyed. From the very break of day, God will protect it. The nations are in chaos, and their kingdoms crumble. God's voice thunders, and the earth melts. The Lord of heaven's armies is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. Come see the glorious works of the Lord. See how he brings destruction upon the world. He causes wars to end throughout the earth. He breaks the bow and snaps the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be honored by every nation. I will be honored throughout the world. The Lord of heaven's armies is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. God, help us today to be still. Help us to just sit in your presence. Not for what we can get out of it, not because we have an agenda, but we just want to be in a relationship with you. God, thank you for your love for us. Thank you for what you've done. Help us to live our lives being still in you. Amen.